1 year, I kind of got an idea. You know, I want to try trap.
I like to trap. I like to make lure. And I like to write. Where can it go from here?
I would be able to spend more time in the woods.
I was losing money hand over fist trapping, but I didn't care.
Getting the traps out there is the hardest part, I think, with them.
I would leave the critters in the back of my truck in the high school parking lot.
We're going to set traps, like, no matter what.
Some of these guys have trapped these areas for generations.
We got through the fur boom.
This is Northern Michigan. This is what you do.
Representing trappers in a positive light.
I'm going to ask you guys a question. Do you know everything?
This will be fun.
Trying to learn something from these legends.
Ask questions without asking questions.
Volume, the Perfect Game magazine.
Instructions from Paragon Gorman.
Herb Lennon's articles, the Herb Lennon ads.
True information, trapping radio.
We are trappers ourselves. To me, that's pretty important.
All right, everybody listening to me?
Develop a system you have to work in ahead of time to build big trappers.
If you got very much the same good trappers, you got bog trap.
They start talking about these big pans.
Most of my tunes are coming from up top, not down bottom.
Probably the best part of the country in the world. I don't get any better.
Trying to set predator trash and trash waders.
The back of that beaver looks like it's sheared.
You better edit this part out.
Yeah, we better.
Back in the fur shed, this is Trapping Today. I'm Jeremiah Wood. Thanks for tuning in. Great to have you. Great to be back here. We are brought to you by Kotz Brothers Lures. Trap smarter, work harder, enjoy the success that follows. Kotz Bros has a full line of trapping supplies. If you're just getting started or you're looking to resupply for the season, go to kotzbros.com. They have it all. Everything you need, from traps and snares to baits and lures to all the little gadgets that you never thought you needed until you started trapping and you realize you need them. Kotz Bros has it. KAATZBROS.com. We're also brought to you by OnX. Ever since Elon Musk bought Twitter and changed the name to X, I feel like I'm hearing people talk about OnX every day, because they say, "Oh, so and so tweeted on X," and I hear OnX mentioned just like, you know, 4 or 5 times a day. Kind of funny little reminder that, hey, OnX Maps supports this podcast and provides an incredible app that is going to be more useful than you ever thought. If you start using this thing, turning your phone into a GPS on the trap line, marking your trap locations or waypoints, getting landowner information, scouting, using aerial imagery, you're going to use this for so many different applications other than just trapping. And it's all in one spot. You just pull up the app on your phone and there it is. You can see the imagery, you see where you're at. You can see all of your data, all of your waypoints, all the different layers that they have there. I use it for trapping, use it for hunting and fishing and farming. And it just, I pull it up just about every day, sometimes 3, 4, 5 times a day. And you have the opportunity through this podcast to support us and get a discount, 20% discount. Go to onxmaps.com and use the promo code TRAP, T-R-A-P, when you check out. You'll get 20% off of your first purchase. Finally, we're brought to you by the Trapping Today store. We have all the different apparel for, you know, Trapping Today, from shirts and hats and coffee mugs and everything else. We also got the Trapping Today lures there. It's time to stock up on Birch River Beaver lure for your spring trapping. It is coming. It's here for a lot of us. So get on and order that. People have asked me about storage of lure from season to season. You can purchase all of next fall's lures right now if you want to. As long as that jar is sealed, you're going to have no problem of that lasting for years. So even open lure jars that I used, I close them up and you reuse them from season to season. Just store it in a cool, dark place and make sure that the lid is sealed well. There's a plastisol on the lid of all my lures. And so that plastisol seals right up against the glass of the jar. And it really keeps it a complete airtight seal, and you don't have to worry about that lure breaking down or losing scent over time. But I want to mention first a really big discount we've got going. We've got a couple of things going on right now at the Trapping Today store. Number one, the t-shirts. So we had the Mustela t-shirt that we started a couple of years ago. That's been a really popular t-shirt, but we are done reprinting those and restocking them. So what we have in stock is what we have. And when we sell out, we're done. We're done. They're gone. And we're offering a special closeout deal of $10 off, not 10% off, $10 off per shirt. Those are typically $25. Now they're going to be $15. So you can go to Trapping Today store. That's while supplies last. So the common sizes like large and extra large might be a little bit hard to find. You've got two different colors to choose from. So make sure if you don't see your size in one color, click over to the other color, see if you can get it there. But once they're gone, they're gone. We're gonna keep this discount going as we start to clear these out. Also, that also applies to the blue Trapping Today logo t-shirts with the Martin and the Trapping Today logo on the front of them. Those are a pretty nice shirt as well. And those are also $10 off. We have a few more of those in stock. I'd encourage folks to get those. They're a really nice shirt. And finally, for a limited time, for any order over $100, you're going to get a free Trapping Today coffee mug. So that's a $16.50 value. And that's going to be included free for any order of $100 or more. So if you want to take the opportunity to buy some shirts, stock up on a little bit of lure. If your total gets up over $100, you get that free coffee mug, and that shipping is included in that as well. So head over to trappingtodaystore.com. It's a good opportunity to take advantage of some deals and get some stuff that you need, or maybe some stuff you don't need, but be really cool to have. And as usual, I always appreciate your support. So we have an exciting episode to get into, and we're going to talk about wilderness trapping. So let's get into the show. The dream of wilderness trapping, a trap line, seclusion, living off the land, complete, utter, remote isolation. The dream of wilderness. It's a dream I've had for a long time. It's a dream that has been, has ebbed and flowed in my mind over the years. It's something I've talked about a lot on this podcast in the past, and is something that I continue to think about. And I get a lot of thoughts and ideas and questions from you guys about it, from a number of our listeners. Had a recent email from one of our listeners about this particular subject, and hopefully he doesn't mind me reading it, because I'm going to do so, because it's really typical. I think I've gotten probably at least a dozen of these in the last couple of years that are very similar along the lines, and this is a guy from Minnesota. And he says, I've been listening to your podcast and greatly enjoying it. Thanks for all the work you put into it. My wife and I are greatly considering moving to the interior of Alaska, and we're wondering if you may know of anyone we could connect with about acquiring a trap line. We've been searching for a wilderness home for a few years now, and we're very interested in the country north of Ely, Minnesota, bordering the Boundary Waters. Even though we love that area and wilderness, we're coming to realize we'll not be able to live as we want to live there, without enough freedoms and country to roam for hunting. After listening to a number of your episodes about trapping in Alaska, we now know it is possible to acquire a trap line no longer used anymore. I've especially enjoyed your shows with Jim Furman. I could listen to him draw out yarns for a long time. So I've actually had a lot of people get in touch with me about the episode with Jim and some of the other wilderness trap line episodes. And it's something that is a draw for a lot of us in the lower 48. It's also something that's a lot easier to dream about than to actually do. And so what I want to try to do in this episode is not to try to discourage people from the Alaska wilderness trapline dream. On the contrary, I may actually help to encourage people, but I want to infuse a little bit of reality so folks know what they're getting into, what they might be getting into, and what the pros and cons are of this particular lifestyle, and maybe where, how you want to design this lifestyle, if you do decide to move up to Alaska and pursue this wilderness trapping dream. So I would say, in my experience, there's about 20 to 25 people talk to me about moving to Alaska for every one that actually does. It's a very common thing for folks to think about, but then when it comes time to actually do it, it doesn't happen. And so trying to understand why that is, and I think a lot of it is people's expectations are a lot different than reality. And people who, a lot of the things that, when we dream, we tend to think about all the good things, but we don't think about the things that would make that dream very difficult. And we actually sit down and go through the realities associated with that dream being able to come true and the sacrifices that you have to make. The vast majority of people are not willing to make those sacrifices, and or they come to the realization that they don't really have it all that bad where they're at. And so they realize what they would have to give up. And I can tell you this from experience, because when I went to trap with Jim in the interior of Alaska back in 2020, when I came back for the next year, for the next 2 years, really, I spent the next 2 years, and especially the next year, all I could think about was how I could get back up there on a more permanent basis. And all the different things ran through my head, from quitting my job and going up there and living a life in poverty and trying to make it work trapping, doing what Tyler and Ashley Selden do, which we'll talk about a little bit later, to getting a job up there, working in the summers, trapping in the winters, to getting a job where and getting a plane and maybe flying out to a trap line, getting a job where I could have 3-4 weeks off at a time and going trapping then, staying here and getting a job where I could be self-sufficient to where I could leave here and go to Alaska for a month at a time, 2 months at a time and trap. The full gamut of possibilities on how I could get back there. And I really thought about it methodically, and because I am 40 years old now, I'm not in, and I was, 36 at the time, I guess 36, 37. And I am in a position where I've set down roots where I'm at, been here for 12 years and have a lot of things that are very difficult to just get up and walk away from. And I have made strides that have taken me to the edge of where I could have done that, and have had to make decisions on whether to go or whether to stay. I won't get into those details in this, but suffice to say that it took a lot of thinking and considering, where I was at in life. And I have decided, at least to this point, that, it's probably not worth tearing up all of the roots that we have here, losing a really good job, taking my kids out of school, moving kids and wife and kids across the country to something that's a complete unknown, and giving up on the farming and the other stuff that I do here outside of the job. I mean, there are positives and negatives for every life situation, but realistically, I was gonna have to give up a lot. And so it got me thinking a little more about, okay, what is it that I have here, and is it really worth giving all of that up for starting over at the middle of my life? it could be worth it for some people. It could be worth it for me. Maybe next year I change my mind. You never know. But you need to know what you're getting into. And you need to, you need to take, if you want to advance this thing and decide and make a decision, you need to go beyond just the idea of, oh, I want to do that. That would be great. And in order to move beyond that, you need to consider all of these things. And that's where people get tripped up. The best thing you can do, fresh out of school, go up to Alaska. So my friend Tyson Porter, Cole Porter has been on the show before, his brother Tyson, he got out of school and he moved up to Alaska. His fiance had a job opportunity in Fairbanks, so it worked out quite well. And they're still there and just absolutely living the dream. Part of me's jealous of what he's doing there. But anybody else, you know, his brother talked about it, thought about it, but after he was here for a few years, got a job, bought a house, settled down, got married, all that. You know what? It's a lot harder. It's a lot harder to pick up and move. So that's fairly easy when you're young, when you've got the whole world in front of you and you know, there's nothing but opportunity. That's probably the time to do it. Even then, you know, it's worth considering the pros and cons of actually making that move. But I would consider anybody who's young to get out there and figure it out. If you're getting a little bit along in years, you're probably, in my experience, the people I've talked to that are my age or older that are talking about it, they're usually more dreaming, less reality, and every year that goes by, they're less likely to actually make that move. So let's go beyond the dream of trapping in the wilderness of Alaska, and let's talk about reality. And the very first thing that I think we need to have in mind, the question you need to ask yourself, is what kind of lifestyle do I want to live? This is where we get into the extreme of what Tyler Seldon and Ashley Seldon did. Tyler decided back when he was in school that, you know, after reading Haimo Korth's book, The Final Frontiersman, about the, Haimo is like the godfather of the wilderness trapping. You know, he still lives off the land and one of those people that has lived this for over 40 years, 40, almost 50 years, I guess. And continues to go back out in the bush every year and stays there for the whole winter in complete isolation. And Tyler decided that's what he wanted to do. He was really just not bought into modern society. And he felt that a very deep connection with the wilderness and the lifestyle, the connection to nature and remote and self-sufficiency. And he's been doing it for a long time now. They have made the ultimate sacrifice. So Tyler would be about my age. I believe he's maybe a year or two older than me, but close to my age. And they've decided that during the trapping season, they're going to live a remote lifestyle in the bush with no road connections, no way to even take a snow machine or a dog team to any town. They go in by either boat in the fall or by plane, and they get flown back out in the spring. And so for a good half the year, they are completely isolated from any communications from the outside world. No TV, no satellite, no electricity, no internet, no phones. And in reach, a little bit of satellite messaging here and there and you know, emergency capabilities, but basically alone and off the grid completely. No stores. You know, you bring all of your food that you need for the winter with you in the fall. You catch and kill whatever else you're going to eat. And you're on your own. That is the ultimate in this wilderness trapping lifestyle. That's one end of the spectrum. We'll go all the way to the other end of the spectrum a little bit later, but I want to kind of help people understand what that actually involves. And so here's the thing that you got to realize if you want to live that lifestyle, if you want to be the Haim O'Korth or the Tyler Seldon, you are going to have to make so many other sacrifices in other parts of your life in order to make that happen. You are basically saying that for however long you do this, and that all depends. You know, some people are like Haimo and just do it until they can't do it anymore. Every year or year round, they're in the bush their entire life. Other people might decide to do it for 5 or 10 years, and then most of the time they'll go back to town. A lot of people have done that. One example would be like Randy Brown. He was featured in the National Geographic Braving Alaska TV show back in like the early 90s. That was also a show that featured Haimo and his family. But Randy was out there for several years alone, and then he got married and had kids, and they stayed out in the bush for a few years, and the kids got to school age. They moved to Fairbanks, and so the kids could go to school, and Randy actually went back to college and got a degree in fisheries, and he became a fisheries biologist, and he's done that the rest of his career. So that's a possibility as well. But if you want to live that lifestyle, that remote bush lifestyle, you're pretty much going to have to sacrifice any possibility of financial security. You're going to have to sacrifice any ability to put money away for the future. You're not going to have a 401k. You're not going to have a retirement plan. When you're young, you might think, well, who cares? It doesn't matter. And it probably doesn't when you're young because, you know, you can always catch up even if you spend a decade without any savings. But as you start to get older, you realize I might want to be taking care of myself for the future and setting things up. You're going to have to sacrifice that. You're also going to have to sacrifice, essentially your entire summer is going to be spent working so you can afford to go back to the bush every fall and spend the winter not working. Because trapping, as we all know, does not pay the bills like it used to. You can't make a living on the trap line. Let's think back. Now I want to talk about, I'll use Jim Furman's area for an example. The Fort Yukon area, because the Yukon River and the Porcupine River and the Black River, those areas, that was like known as the fur triangle of interior Alaska. It was loaded with fur, loaded with trappers. It was a place where every square mile that could be trapped was essentially being trapped back in the 30s and 40s, 20s, 30s, 40s, and 50s. Off and on, but pretty much steadily trapped. Once you got into the 60s and 70s, people started moving to town, get closer to school for the kids and so forth. But during that time period, that area was full of trap lines. And the reason for that was because the value of the fur was high enough that you could make a living trapping. And my favorite trapper, a guy by the name of Joe Ward, he trapped the Upper Porcupine River back in from 1920s, 20s to 30s, and he trapped essentially for 50 years, his entire adult life, and he made a living of it. Joe was a professional trapper. Now, here's a little statistic I want to share with you. Joe was a pro trapper, and he also was a conservationist, and he managed his trap line with a certain level of harvest of the animals, And when he made a certain amount of money, he stopped so that he, you know, he allowed, you know, fur bears to, he left some for seed, you might say. So he would stop trapping and allow animals to multiply and be around for the following year, or the following years for him to catch. According to James Carroll's book, Above the Arctic Circle, he said Joe would trap every year till he made $6,000 worth of fur, and then he would stop. Doesn't seem like much. I applied an inflation calculator to that $6,000 the time that that was written. Joe's $6,000 was $100,000 in today's money. And so you could trap for a few months in the wintertime, do it hard, do it professionally. You could make $100,000. You could make more than most of us make in America today. That's why that area was full of trap lines. The only people, and that's why that's deserted today, the only people that are still up there trapping are people who are like you and me that just love to trap. We do it because we love it. But we have to make incredible sacrifices in order to make it happen. And so I want to share a few of the financial realities of making this trap line dream happen if you want to run a remote trap line like Haimo and Edna Korth, like Tyler and Ashley Selden, or Charlie Jagow, or all, there's tons of people that do this, but there's not tons, there's probably dozens of people that do this in Alaska and the interior, that are really dedicated to doing it on a full-time basis for the winter. So the very first thing you got to think about is you have to get there. Transportation. And you pretty much have to decide that, you know, are you going to get dropped off in the fall and get picked up in the spring? Are you going to get yourself there personally in the fall and get yourself back in the spring? Or are you going to go back and forth multiple times? Because all those things cost money. So typically, if we're talking about living this remote lifestyle, you're probably going to get flown in and get flown back out. In some cases, like in Tyler's case, a lot of years he'll take a boat up to bring stuff in, but he'll take the boat back down and get flown in for the final trip to get it on the trap line. So you're pretty much, realistically, you're dealing with, if you take a boat in, you're going in like September before freeze up, and then you're going to wait like a month or two before you even start trapping, and you're just sitting around doing nothing. You know, there's things you could do, but you're just kind of hanging out, eating food, burning through your food supply, and maybe you're getting firewood, maybe you're getting stuff ready, but you can't really get around until freeze up happens, when you can travel along the streams and rivers and lakes. So you're probably realistically going to want to get flown in. What you need to do is take a map and look at the city of Fairbanks, and you draw a circle around Fairbanks. And pretty much look at like 100-mile radius of Fairbanks. Once you're outside of that radius, your cost is going to be incredibly high to get flown into any trap line. Maybe even 50-mile radius. It probably all depends. But the reason for that is most of the flight services that are going to fly you out of a place, they're going to be based right in Fairbanks, and you're going to have to pay for the flight right from there. Now, there are services that fly the mail, and they fly passengers from Fairbanks to all of the different villages, all the different remote villages, but they're going to drop you off in the village. And that's another type of trapping that we're going to talk about later as well. But they're going to drop you off in the village. They're not going to take you beyond the village. They go to their bigger planes. They go to big airports. If you're going to have someone land on a gravel bar, land, you know, on a runway, a primitive type runway on your trap line, you're going to have to pay someone for a special charter. Those charters, for most people that I've talked to, outside of that 100-mile radius, your minimum of $1,500 right now per flight. You got to come out, you get sick, you get a sore tooth, you get a toothache and you get a tooth pulled, you get a medical emergency of other nature, you want to come in for Christmas, whatever, every time $1,500. And so think about that. It takes a lot of savings just to get in and get out, you know. And if you are running a dog team, you're going to have your dogs flown in. If you got a wife and kids, you may not be able to all get in one trip. You might have to take two trips. And so you're talking, you know, thousands and thousands of dollars just to get in and out of your trap line. I would suspect that there are some years where, because I have had some trappers tell me what their charter bills were for the year. There are years where you don't catch enough fur to even cover the charter bill. Okay. The other thing you got to think about is your food. You're going to need the money to purchase all of the food you're going to eat through the course of a winter. And it's probably a lot of food. Yes, you're going to be able to hopefully kill a moose, maybe, depending where you're at, maybe some caribou. But there are a lot of things that you're not going to get out there. And a large number of people over the years have decided they're going to go in the woods and didn't bring enough food and ended up dying or starving or going near starvation because they... all of a sudden they get a huge reality check when they found out that they didn't have near enough to survive as long as they were going to be away from any source of food. The other thing you're going to have is fuel. You got to have gas. If you're going to ride a snow machine around your trap line, if you're going to have dogs, you're going to need food for the dogs. So you could pretty much double the amount of food that you need. If you're on a good river where you can catch salmon, you could probably catch salmon for your dogs. The last few years in Alaska, that's been, virtually impossible in most places because the salmon runs have crashed to a level where they've shut down the fishing in most of the rivers. So it's very difficult to get reliable dog food for your dog team. So you're probably going to have to fly food in. You may be able to get into some beaver trapping and catch some beaver for your dogs to supplement that other food, but you're going to have to feed the dogs. Gas, you're going to have to haul in, have your gas flown in. That's going to be incredibly expensive. And you're going to only be able to bring in, you know, a limited amount. So you're going to be limited in how much trapping you can do by how much gas you can actually fly in or bring in otherwise. The other aspect of this is the isolation. This is a lifestyle that is not fit for everybody. And some people think that they're ready for it and they actually get into it and they realize that, holy smokes, I bit off way more than I can chew. I cannot handle being alone for so long. Or you're with a partner and you and your partner drive each other crazy after 3, 4, or 5 months of being together in tight quarters. Another thing to consider, you got to have shelter. You got to build a cabin, and you're probably going to be somewhat limited in what you can bring for supplies to outfit that cabin. That's going to be a big investment in labor and materials, time and money. You're going to have to outfit yourself with a bunch of traps, and those traps are going to have to be brought in. Very, very difficult to bring in large numbers in a short period of time. So that's probably something that you're going to have to work in over the course of years. you got to think about the dangers associated with being so remote. There's nobody that you can rely on. You can't go over, walk a mile to your neighbor and get help if there's an emergency. You're pretty much limited to, hitting the emergency on the inReach and getting the medevac flight coming in. So you better be a big deal. You probably get a plane to come in if it's a little bit less than an emergency, but pretty urgent. But again, let's remember what we talked about with the flight. You're probably talking $1,500 to $2,000 to get somebody in. Finally, you got to realize that this is work. This is pure, back-breaking, hard, monotonous work. You're going to have to clear trail. And if you've never cleared trail before, it's some of the hardest manual labor that you could imagine. And you're going to have miles and miles and miles and miles of trail to clear if you want to have a productive trap line. And so you're going to do all of this, spend all this money, invest all this money, do all this work so that you can trap, which involves a lot of work. And you're going to sacrifice any type of career or any financial security or anything else in order to be able to do this. So there's a level of freedom here. There's incredibly valuable reward that comes with living this lifestyle, but just realize all the things that you have to sacrifice in order to make it happen at this level. Now, I have dreamed of making it at this level in the past, and I still do. There's like part of me that thinks I'd still would like to do something like this, like a super remote trap line, but I think I would have to be in a position where I could work remotely, have Starlink all linked up, and have an internet connection. I'd be a little less primitive. I'd have a generator going, maybe a solar system, have an internet connection and be working half of the time on something that was economically feasible, and then trapping the other half the time. Have to have no other responsibilities in life, but it'd be pretty cool. It'd be a pretty cool thing to do. But you'd have to be in a situation where you could do that. And I haven't figured out how to do it up to now. Be pretty cool, be pretty difficult. I think you're gonna have to make somewhere around that $100,000 a year level to be able to comfortably do it. Other than just, having to make those sacrifices. So we covered one end of the spectrum. Why don't we go to the other end of the spectrum? And that is moving to a city, living the same lifestyle that you would live anywhere else in the United States, but being in Alaska, in an Alaska town, Alaska city, and being able to trap in Alaska and trap in the bush, in the wilderness, on kind of the outskirts of town. This is what the majority of trappers do in Alaska. They are just like you and me. They have a 9-to-5 job or, a regular job. They live in a home. They have electricity, running water. They have a vehicle, transportation. Everything is just like everybody else in the country. But they go trapping. They trap on the weekends. They trap in the evenings before and after work, maybe. Maybe they get a few weeks of vacation off of work and they go trap. And this is a good compromise between, being able to get out into the wilderness and having to support a family, having to pay bills, having to live the reality of what you have to do in order to have the most of the modern comforts that we have these days. The upside to this is it's a lot more affordable, and you're able to live a normal, what most people would consider a normal lifestyle, and also trap. The downside is there's a very limited road system in Alaska, and there are pretty large number of trappers, and most of them do trap on the road system. So there's a lot of competition, and there's a lot of area that's already claimed. it's very difficult to find a trap line on the road system in Alaska. You kind of have to get creative and talk to people, figure out where other people are trapping, and find a place where you probably have to work a little harder than everybody else to get out and away and in an area that's not being trapped. It is possible you can find it. You may have to drive to the end of the road system or beyond, but or cut, you know, really long stretches of trail that are going to get you in an area that's not being trapped. But it can be done. The best thing to do in this case is to join the Alaska Trappers Association. And whatever area you're in, I know we're using Fairbanks a lot, but there's also a lot of other towns that you could live in Alaska and do this. And get involved in the association and your local chapter. Go to the meetings and start talking to people and figure out where people are trapping and ask folks, okay, is there a way that I can get a trap line started, and where could I go where I wouldn't be stepping on somebody else's toes? One of the things that we're seeing in the trapping world right now is there's a lot of older people, older trappers, who are aging out, and they're getting too old to run their lines, and they're starting to quit, or a lot of them have not trapped their trap lines in a number of years. And so that's a good opportunity to get, a lot of them actually still do go to the regular, you know, the Trappers Association meetings, are still interested in it, but they just don't have the energy or the health to be able to continue running their lines very much. So that's a great chance for a younger person to get in, connect with one of those guys, and go help them and work with them on their line, and you could inherit a trap line doing that. That's probably your best way to get in. Otherwise, you could talk to some people and figure out an area that's not being trapped and start cutting your own trail and create your own trap line off of the road system somewhere. That's a good compromise. That's a good compromise between the extreme one of the spectrum of just living remote wilderness lifestyle and being in town. Let's talk about something that's a little bit in the middle, and that is living in one of the remote villages. So the most of the villages still do have several people. These are very small villages. They're isolated. When I say remote villages, I'm referring to villages that are off the road system. So you can't get to them very easily. And they're small areas. There's not a lot of people living there. There is opportunity to set up trap lines in those areas. There are some different nuances around trapping out of one of the villages and even moving to one of the villages. The biggest thing to me is, as an outsider, you know, you got to think about how welcome are you going to be there? Are people going to accept you? And that's number one. And number two is, where am I going to live? Because in most of these villages, housing is a very big challenge. Number three is, how am I going to afford to live here? And that you have to come in with a bunch of money in order to be able to do that. Because number four, you're not going to find a job. There is not, these villages are not booming economic centers. And so they're beautiful places. There's some great people in villages. They are people who share the same values as you and I, hunting, fishing, trapping, outdoors people, living off the land. But a lot of people are probably going to find it difficult to just move into a remote village as an outsider and to try to fit in and to have a life there. I'm not saying that it can't be done, but it's definitely a challenge. There are some villages that, you know, are governed by tribal organizations that I don't think if you or I wanted to move there that we'd be legally allowed to, okay? So like my friend Gary Simple in Venati, Alaska, they've got they're basically on reservation land. So they own their land, and they essentially control that village. They, I don't want to say they govern themselves, but they kind of do. And you can't just go and live there. You either have to have a family member that's from there, or you have to have maybe a special situation where you're invited by the tribal council or something, but you just can't go live there. And so there's a lot of places that are going to be like that. There's places where you might decide you want to live in a village, and you can't find a place to live. These villages are very small land areas that are have a bunch of houses crowded in a small place. And then once you get out of there, it's all either tribal land or state land or federal land that you can't build on. And so you got to either find a place for sale, or you're out of luck, or maybe rent a place, but it's not easy. Not to say there aren't opportunities, but you can't just pick your village on the map. You might have to have 20 or 30 villages in mind and start making contacts from different people and find an opportunity somewhere. The other thing is, living in a village is, it's a lot like living in a city in certain ways, that at least in my limited experience, it seems like the houses are all crowded close together. They have the same issues that we have everywhere else in cities with drugs and alcohol. You don't lock your doors. You don't lock things up. Stuff is probably going to go missing. You know, there's a lot of good people out there, but there's some people that are under the influence of different substances and might be hard to be neighbors with. And so you may have a place where you got a spot in the village. And that's another thing that I've thought about is it'd be a good setup where you have maybe a small lot and a house in one of these villages, and then you go out to your trap line from there. And so because they're already quite remote, you typically will not have to leave and go very far away from the village before you can start trapping. And you probably have set up a line. If you go in and you decide you're going to set up a line from scratch, you're probably not going to do well if you don't start asking around and kind of getting permission from people. Because what you're going to find is all of these villages are comprised of different families, and families have their own trapping area that has been considered theirs over the generations. And there's an area that might not have been trapped for the last 20 or 30 years. But if you went in there and started opening up trap lines and setting traps, you're going to be like, you're going to be the enemy of that family. And you're going to have some serious problems of fitting in and being accepted in that village, because they consider that, or even worse, because they consider that their land, even though it might be federal land, it might be public, they consider it their land. So you either have to buy a trap line from someone in one of the villages, or really get to know people and make friends with somebody and get permission to trap in an area. But it would be kind of a cool setup where you could have a cabin, a small lot, maybe half an acre in a cabin. You put your snow machines there. You maybe store your equipment and stuff. And then you can fly in there and go out and run your trap line from there. The positive of things with the villages is that they have regular flight service. A lot of the villages have daily flight service, Monday through Friday, where they get a plane coming in every day. It's not cheap, but probably for a couple hundred bucks from Fairbanks, you can get there. And you can get groceries in, you can get Amazon deliveries, whatever. And so you can fly in, get into your base camp, your lot, your cabin, whatever, and then go out and trap. Stuff is still not going to be cheap. Any of the stores in the villages, the food is going to be probably double the cost of what it would be in town. Maybe more than double, depending on the product. And the gas is going to be, right now, I bet it's $8, $8 or $9 a gallon for gas. And so your costs are going to be really, really high. So it's going to cost a lot. Depending on your personality, depending on the people in the particular village, you may or may not be able to make friends and have a good relationship with people. But be honest, you know, when you're the minority, if you're a white person in a primarily Native village, it might be difficult to fit in. It could happen. It could be a great relationship, or it could be very uncomfortable for some people. It just depends on the particular situation. So something to think about. You're going to have very high costs. You're going to have to go in already with some money. You're going to have to expect the pros and cons of living in a small isolated area with very, very close to other people. And you're going to have to figure out the landscape and what the opportunities are out on the land and whether people are going to accept you or not. But I think that would be a pretty cool situation if you could have kind of a base camp somewhere there. You could also look at some of the villages that are on the road that are still, you know, fairly remote, but are connected by the road system. So you can kind of reach out and get to places where there isn't a lot of, there aren't a lot of people there. So you probably have a better chance of finding a place to trap, but you're going to be able to get to and from that place with a vehicle if you have to. Overall, a lot of this, you know, you can choose where you want to be on this spectrum of living in the city to living in the bush. And one more thing I want to talk about is how you can have your cake and eat it too. There is a sacrifice here, but there is a way to live in the city, or the near the city, and still have the bush lifestyle. There are several people that do this today and are very successful in doing it. And that is to own a plane. If you can own your own plane and get your pilot's license, you can live in town and have a job in any of these towns and cities in Alaska. And you can fly out to the trapline on weekends or on weeks off, vacation, whatever. You can fly out and check your trap lines. There's guys that do this, guys that live in Anchorage and fly out of Anchorage and go to these incredibly remote areas and have traps set for wolverine and lynx and wolf and everything else. And Marty Maiorato has a trap line that he runs, and he lives outside of Fairbanks in one of the towns in the outskirts of town, suburbs, and he'll fly out from his back door, airstrip behind the house, fly out to the trap line, and be out there maybe a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks at a time, and then come back home. So that is a way to have your cake and eat it too. It costs a lot of money. There are inherent dangers associated with flying. There are plane crashes that you hear about on a regular basis in the Alaska bush. So there's always a potential danger there and a high cost, but it does allow you it opens up opportunities that you otherwise would not have for trapping in Alaska. So I'm going to leave you with 4 points from this discussion about going out to trap in Alaska, about this dream that a lot of us have had for a long time. Number one, recognize the cost. Recognize the costs that are associated with fulfilling this dream. Recognize that you're going to, depending on how remote you want to be, you're going to have some super high costs of flights to get in and out of your trap line. You're going to have high food costs. You're going to have high fuel costs. You're going to have to sacrifice financially the fact that you're going to go months at a time without any income. You're sacrificing your financial future, so there's a lot of cost there. And that's a reason why nobody's trapping in the bush of Alaska these days, because that financial reality is something that we do have to deal with. It's easy to dream, but when it comes to the numbers, when you actually put the numbers together, it's very hard to make it work. So one, recognize the cost. to weigh the pros and cons. Think about what you're going to be giving up and what you're going to be gaining if you go out and do this, whether it's trapping out of town, whether it's trapping in the remote bush trap line. Think about all the pros and cons that we discussed. You're going to have this incredible freedom. You're going to be trapping in a place where you've got all these animals, really high value, high quality fur. You have essentially no regulations, very, very minimal regulations, very few neighbors, very few other trappers in competition to deal with, depending on where you're at. But you're also going to have high cost to get there. You're going to be having to work really, really hard. You're going to be isolated, and you may not have that support from a community of other like-minded people where you're at. Number three, make some contacts. And so get in touch with folks that that might help, might be willing to help you out. I know Jim, Jim's been on the podcast before. I can't tell you how many people have asked me for Jim's contact info. I don't always share that because I don't want to inundate him with a bunch of different people asking about the same questions about trapping in Alaska, because most people don't actually follow up with it. And I'd rather just see people go out there and get started, and get going and show that you're actually, you're serious about doing it. But make some contacts, contact some of these other people, particularly Alaska Trappers Association, Randy Zarnke. There's several other people. There's board of directors there. If you've got a particular area in Alaska, look at the board, look at the different chapters, figure out where those people are from. You become a member, you'll get the magazine, and you'll be able to see where different people are at. And there's a particular place in Alaska that you want to be. See where which person is close to that area, and contact them, and start asking some questions. You go to trapperman.com, go to the Wilderness Trapping and Living Forum, that message board, and there's a bunch of people on there that are always willing to provide info for beginners. They also get tired of answering the same questions over and over again. But if you're serious about it, maybe get in there, put up a post about what you want to know. There are several that will provide some useful responses and helpful responses, and then maybe start sending private messages to those people and start developing a relationship there. There are two major fur buyers in Fairbanks. Joe Maddy from, Alaska Raw Fur Company, and Bill Wyvoda from maybe Arctic Raw Fur Company. And those two guys, they buy fur from people all over the state, and they know who traps where. They know where all the historic trap lines are, and they could help put you in the right direction if anyone's got a trap line for sale, for instance. A lot of times they'll know about it, or if someone is not trapping an area and might be interested in selling out, they could help you out with that. And then finally, the final point here is try it out. You're not going to know if you really want this, if you really think you want this, you're not going to really know for sure until you go there and try it out. So make a visit. Just go. Move to Fairbanks. Move to Anchorage. I can't tell you that. Don't move to Anchorage. Move to one of these towns on the road and start making contacts. And start meeting people. Get a job. Start asking around. That's what Tyler did. Tyler Selton and Ashley, they took jobs on the haul road. In Coldfoot, they were working out of a truck stop in Coldfoot cooking. And I think Tyler was a cook and Ashley was a waitress. And they stayed in the quarters there. And they wanted to be out there. And they had no contacts and they had nobody there to start them out. And so they just went. And when they were there, they started exploring. They started meeting people. They met coworkers and friends, and they go into town, they talk to different people, and all of a sudden they just built this network of people slowly over time. And Tyler got started working with a guy who was a trapper and started talking about how he wanted to trap. And this guy, they became friends, and this guy decided that he was going to make it his mission to find Tyler a trap line. And he had connections everywhere. And all of a sudden, trap line for sale pops up. So these things happen, but you have to make them happen. And the best thing, the best way to do that, if you're truly serious about it and you're willing to make those sacrifices and you're not in my position where you're kind of old and settled in, you need to just get up there and get going and get after it, get started. So I hope this helped, guys. And for those of you who have had that trap line dream of going up in the wilderness and trapping in Alaska, I would love to see more people do it. I'd love to see maybe a little less talk and a little more action actually getting out there. And if you really want it, go for it. And let us know how you made out. All right. Thanks for everything. And for listening into the show. Again, don't forget trappingtodaystore.com for the discounted t-shirts. $10 off the t-shirts and $100 order will get you a free Trapping Today coffee mug. Make sure to check that out while supplies last. And till next time, keep on talking trapping, keep on thinking trapping. We'll catch you on the next episode.